Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're streaming live, by the way, on biz1190.com. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. And I just found out last week, I think thanks to our producer, Joy, here, that you can actually go on iTunes and find us. And I didn't even know that until I had some people tell me. But anyway, we're glad you're here. Here at Driven to Business, we try to talk about a lot of aspects of business, including marketing and hiring and running your business. Well, one of the things we also like to talk about is running your finances, not only the finances of your business, but the finances of your life. We have a great guest today to deal with that. His name is Mike Haswell. Mike is the president of Storing Treasures. You can find that at storingtreasures.com. And they are, among other things, a financial coaching firm. Mike, welcome to Driven to Business.
Thank you, Eddie. Good to be here.
Hey, I'm really glad you're here. And, you know, you and I were talking prior to the program. We both know so many people, and everybody knows people, that for one reason or another just get their lives in complete disarray in the area of finances. Just off the top of your head, why do you think that is?
Well, you know, our society is such there's such a focus on immediate gratification, and there's such a shift in the past 25 years from more of a saving would always come first to now we've, as a society, have become accustomed to seeing something and really just wanting to get it. It's just an immediate gratification issue, and it's a lack of planning as well. A lot of times we think, well, my finances are the same one month to the next, but that's not true. Actually, what happens is, there's a lot of variables that go on with our money, and we need to take the time to get to know those. And that's how we can make a difference in our lives, is taking the time really to get to know ourselves and what's going on with our money.
Mike, if what I read and hear is true, and you're much more an expert on this than I am, most Americans have very low savings. In fact, I was reading, this is surprising, that a lot of Americans getting ready for retirement have less than $60,000 in the bank, which may sound like a lot of money if you're 30 years old, but if you're getting ready to retire and live on that, that's not going to last very long. Is that true? And what does that say about our culture? And maybe you've already answered that.
Well, you know, it is true, but what's interesting is it's a little bit even worse than that. Here's an interesting statistic. Today, 10,000 people are going to turn 65 years old, and they're going to turn every day for the next 19 years, 10,000 people are going to turn 65 years old. There is an amazing rush with the baby boomer generation.
Right.
And what's interesting about that is they're going to have less than $60,000 in savings and will be dependent on Social Security for the most part,
right,
to help them with their money. And as we know, Social Security is a questionable context going forward. And then you have, in some cases, 66% of Americans only have $25,000 in savings as they head to retirement. So it is a huge social issue. And it's one that we can do something about. We just really have to take the time to get to know what's going on with our money.
You know, my plan is that young guys like our producer, Joey, are going to support us. That's my plan. Is that a good plan?
Joey, I got a deal for you after we're done.
I read a book, and I heard a guy talk some years ago. The guy, his name is Dave Chilton. Mm-hmm. And Dave wrote a pretty interesting book some years ago called The Wealthy Barber. I'll tell you something that was funny in that book. I don't know if it was in the book or when he spoke, but I've used his line a number of times, and I emailed him and told him I'd stolen it. But he says that there are people that can live on a budget, but they're no fun at parties. So I've always related to
that. Nobody likes the B word.
But you know, he makes a statement, he makes the premise in his book, and makes the statement a lot of times that it's very difficult to get rich quickly, but it isn't all that hard, perhaps use the term wealthy instead of rich, mm-hmm. It is not all that hard to be financially successful slowly. Address that.
Well, as we talked about before, because we've kind of been conditioned to move to this immediate gratification, instant gratification kind of world that we live in, we don't really take the time to realize that little things we do today, behavior changes we make today, habits that we change in our lives today, have a huge impact years down the road. Right. I'll talk to people that I've talked to 10 years ago, and they've decided to make a behavioral change. And I'll go back to them and say, tell me how that impacted your finances, as well as your communication. And to a person, they'll come back and say, it made all the difference in the world. At the time, it seemed like that small change wouldn't matter, and yet it's what drove us to financial success. It's what drove us to really understand what we need to do to be successful, because it was a behavior we had never thought about before.
Right.
And when we made that shift, it changed everything about where our family was headed. And so anybody who thinks that those small changes don't matter, they do. They can have huge impact, but you have to be patient and you have to allow time to work. That's the key thing. Allow it time to work.
Mike, you talk a lot about on your website and in talking to you and the things you've written and so forth. You talk a lot about that. You use the term behavior a lot. I don't hear a lot of financial planners. I guess they indirectly say that, but they don't say it directly. But you use that term a lot, behavior.
Yeah, we base our whole financial program around financial personality. And it started 20 years ago when I would be going through this whole issue of how I can help people. Is I would sit down with couples and right. I would realize, I would give them advice. And one of the people would say, that's great. We're going to go do that. We're going to get home. We're going to, you know, take this whole issue of putting this into practice. We're going to start it. But then what happened was the other spouse would say, I'm not really clear on what it is I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And I would tell them how it worked for me. And as a result of that, what they would try to do is they would indicate, you know, well, for one of us it works, but for the other it's not. And I found it was a behavior issue. And after 12 years of doing counseling, instead of me telling them how it worked for me, we would have assessed their own financial personality and find out how it works for them. And that changed our entire business. Because now our business was about understanding you first, and then from there, you can get out of debt, save for the future, give your life away, set up a spending plan based on your personality versus my personality. And that was a huge shift.
You know, when I was getting married, my grandmother, Mamaw, I called her, I was introduced after she met my wife, just now my wife, Vicki. Mm-hmm. And she, one of the questions she pulled me aside, my grandmother was a very, very, very frugal woman, having lived through the Depression and just one of these people saved everything and was a wonderful person, but very, very frugal. And she kind of pulled me aside and said, how is she with money? She said, is she real tight? And I said, Mamaw, she's the stingiest person I know. And she said, well, that's good. I'm glad. My wife's not really stingy. I should quickly correct that. She's very frugal. But, you know, in our personalities, I actually, which is a little bit of a different role from than you normally hear about men and women, I'm much looser with money than my wife is. But we're a good team mm-hmm. because we sort of, you know, we dictate behaviors. I'll probably push her out of perhaps being a bit too frugal in some areas, in particular areas of investment and things of that sort. I'll take some risk in that area. But she also sort of pulls me back in. So we sort of have a combined behavior when we affect each other.
Well, you know, it's funny. You touched on two things there. First of all, people think that financial differences are based on gender. In fact, there's a lot of programs out there that teach men are based this way, women are based this way. But that's really not accurate.
That's not my
experience. We have different personality types. We talk, one of them is a cruise director, and it's just like it sounds. My wife is a cruise director. There are as many male cruise directors as there are female cruise directors. And so as a result of that, when you realize it's not gender specific, but it's based on our personality, you know, you can really start making decisions based on how your family is wired. So when I do seminars, we break spouses up. Actually, what we do is we break up different personality types, four different groups, and spouses 80% of the time are not sitting together. Why? Because you're typically attracted to someone who is not like you.
Right.
And so when they're like, you know, we're fighting all the time, it's just crazy. I really wish I was married to someone who is like me.
No.
I'm like, no, you don't.
I do not want that.
You don't want that. Because then what happens is, you know, one of you is expendable, right? That's
exactly
simply how it goes.
No,
and the other thing is that there's a blind spot there. So you want to get people around you that are not like you, and when you're married to someone who's different, you got it covered.
You know, in a couple of minutes before the break here, going on air, we both talked about that we know people at all income levels mm-hmm. that seem to be, they live paycheck to paycheck, and that can be someone that makes very little money or someone that makes a lot of money.
Right.
And talk to us about that for a moment.
Well, sure. So it's not based on your income level.
Right.
I've seen people who are making, you know, $250,000 a year that are in much worse shape than someone who's making $50,000 a year. And it's all in how we manage that money.
Right.
And typically what happens is it's a behavioral principle. Someone gives me $10,000, I'm going to spend $20,000.
Right.
And it's something to go with our brains where we're actively thinking we have more than we do. The key is we have to understand that based on our financial personality, that the income level isn't the issue. It's our ability to spend within our means is
right.
What drives that.
That is so true. And I have to tell you, Mike, I've had employees and friends and others that have just had, and particularly in the case of an employee, when we're paying them, I know what kind of money they're making, and it's mm-hmm. pretty good. I'm like, how? You should not be having credit card. You shouldn't have a $20,000 overdue credit card bill. That doesn't make mm-hmm. any sense. And then, you see people just do crazy things like take a second mortgage on their home to pay off a credit card
right.
if they don't destroy the credit card. And then they're right back in the same boat they were in before, only now you now owe the bank more money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I find them so hard to understand, but I think maybe what you're telling us here is that because I'm a personality that won't do that, I have a hard time understanding a personality that will.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And so as a result of that, if you understand there's certain personality types that are more cooperative and they're also more willing to be spendthrifts, and that's
right.
the way they're wired, that they feel already very much like, redheaded stepchild because they're not good at managing their money. Actually, they have strengths also.
Right, sure.
But the key is to tap into those strengths and to recognize where they have challenges and bring people around them to help. I mean, that's really the goal here. Is not to go and continue with the same destructive habits, but by changing that behavior based on how you're wired, you're not swimming upstream anymore. It's really a way for you to live out your own natural inclinations in such a way that's going to benefit you going forward.
Exactly. And Mike, I know you see this more than I do, but when financials, marriage is stressful, it's wonderful,
period.
but it's stressful.
Sure.
All relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
And when you introduce a lot of financial stress into a marriage, mm-hmm. that particularly when it becomes all people get in so deep it almost seems hopeless to them, mm-hmm. that adds a layer of stress that a lot of marriages just don't survive. And I think it's very important that people realize that and deal with it up front. It's just one of those things that you can't. We'll talk more about this after the break, but it's just one of those things that just absolutely tears you up. You are listening to Driven to Business. We're talking with Mike Haswell, and we've got a lot more to come, so stick around. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Welcome back to the second segment of Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190. And as always, we're glad you're here. Our guest today is Mike Haswell, the president of Storing Treasures, where you can find him at storingtreasures.com. By the way, if you don't write that down, if you go to eddiemayfield.com, our show website, the link will be there. Go to the blog page and take a look at that. Mike, when we hear the word stewardship, now both of us are active in church,
mm-hmm.
and we think immediately about giving money. That's what we, when you hear there's a stewardship campaign, and it usually is, to be realistic about it, that usually is about money.
Mm-hmm.
But the word is more encompassing than that, isn't it?
It is. Steward actually means a manager.
Right.
That's what steward is. We're all stewards, and we've all been given an trust. We're entrusted with resources, our family, our money, our house. Really, it's when we think we own it that the problems come in. We're managers of it. We're stewards of it. And it reminds me of the Bible verses in regards to the talents. The one man was given five talents, another two
right.
talents, another one talent. The one that was given five and two, those two gentlemen invested it for the kingdom, invested it for the owner, came back and doubled his money, basically. I'd love to find out what investment that was, by the way.
Exactly right.
That would be great. But they don't tell us that in the Bible.
For oil and gas, I'm pretty sure. About
right. Well, the one who had one took his talent, and he dropped it in the ground, and he covered it up. And our talent, the talent there isn't just financial. It's our experiences. It's our ability to help others, our giving, our natural tendencies, all of that, and he buried it, and his master came home and wasn't very happy with him because he didn't take it and at least try to earn some additional money
right.
on it. And a talent is in today's money is $250,000. That's one talent. So we're talking about a lot of money
exactly,
there.
Yeah.
And so basically what the Lord is telling us is you don't bury your talent. Be a good steward. That's what it's all about.
You know, to put it a bit in a business sense here for a moment, you know, I think that, you know, there's an old saying I'm sure you've heard of being penny wise and pound foolish, mm-hmm. where people will be worried about, pennies and let the larger amounts go by messing around with a penny somewhere. And I do think you can be, in a business sense, for instance, you can be overly frugal. If you, as an entrepreneur and as a business person, there's a certain amount of risk that just comes with being right. a business person. And you have to put some of that at risk. If you won't do that, you probably are not going to be successful. In fact, you would never start a business to start with. So those kind of personalities rarely ever find themselves mm-hmm. owning businesses. But it works in any area of life. There's a certain amount of risk. You've got to put some money out there. And just being, again, back to a Bible principle, there's no excuse in the Bible for being stingy. That's not right. a virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Stinginess is never a virtue in the Bible. Along those lines, I read a story a long time ago, and I think it was in Newsweek magazine, although, Mike, I tried to actually look that up this morning, and I couldn't find the actual reference. So I think it was Newsweek. Mm-hmm. But they did a story on a bunch of successful business people who happened to be evangelicals. The story would have to, and it was, this is a secular magazine, but it had to do with that. And they were trying to figure out what made these guys successful. And the magazine, the writer of the magazine, made a couple of interesting points. And he said that, you know, the values they have in their faith mm-hmm. are the same values that have made them successful in business. It was things like thrift and honesty. And he listed a lot of things. But does that tie in with your philosophies on financial behavior?
Well, it does. I think what makes an entrepreneur successful and those that are moving forward success in either, you know, your Christian walk or certainly in your ability to be able to reach out to others is that you have to understand yourself. Know thyself, right?
Right.
That's an old principle. It's critical to understand yourself. And by doing that, your financial behaviors that we talk about is that, you know, don't try to run from them. Embrace them, understand yourself, and then that's what makes a great entrepreneur in business is someone who can make mistakes and learn from them and then put those into practice. We were talking earlier about how long it takes sometimes to get your finances in order, that it takes time, it takes
right.
resources. Same thing with your business. I mean, you have to keep pushing forward that it's someone who, you know, all of a sudden makes it. It's years of hard work
right.
in trying different things to figure out what is the best way for me to get this great idea out there. Successful entrepreneurs understand that about themselves. They don't give up, and they continue to learn. That is critical.
I think you're right. I think becoming arrogant and thinking you know everything is mm-hmm. one of the real impediments to learning anything, because the moment you think you know everything, then no one can teach me anything. I know everything. And that's really the beginning of your downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, I think that the idea that you sometimes hear stories about, and we all buy into these stories, that you hear of someone that was an overnight success,
mm-hmm.
and that is so rarely ever really true. When you look behind the scenes, yes, the guy, maybe his product took off in a few months' time, but if you look back and what he did to prepare that product, he spent years and years and years and years and years getting that going. And that's more the typical story of success, much more the typical story
mm-hmm.
than some overnight flash in the pan where a guy made a lot of money there.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of the entrepreneurs continue to invest in their business, this is a little bit of a different take on that. But I interviewed Sandra Young some months ago. Sandra's an executive with a bank down in Florida now, but at the time I talked to her, she was an executive VP with SunTrust mm-hmm. here in Atlanta. And I interviewed her based on a conversation that she and I had kind of offline. She was telling me about some entrepreneurs she was counseling that had gotten in real trouble. Mm-hmm. And she said they just kept on putting money into their business, even when it was apparent to everybody but them that this business was finished. But they just kept pouring and pouring and pouring money to the point that they lost everything, including everything that made the business, because they just refused to give up on the idea. Is that a caution, you think, to those of us, and that would include you, mm-hmm. by the way, that own businesses, that we should always be aware of that?
Oh, absolutely. Let's face it. If you're starting a business, if you've been in a business, it's your passion. It's your baby.
Right.
And sometimes you get a little tunnel vision when it comes to your baby. I mean, the bottom line is that you think that, you know, boy, this is the best thing since sliced bread. I need to get this out there. This is good for me. It's good for my family. It's good for other people. And it's your passion. And it's important, I think, in those situations to make sure that you're bringing other people around you throughout the process. Do you have a board of advisors that can look you in the eye that is not invested in the business, but a group of people, men or women, that can provide counsel? And if you don't, you probably should think about doing that, because it is critical for you to be able to get good advice. And other people can see blind spots that you can't.
Right.
And if you're an entrepreneur, you're probably running the show on your own, and you may have a partner, but you need people around you that can really just look at you and say, that's a mistake. You need to watch that, because you're talking about not only the business finances, but perhaps a lot of your own personal finances that are tied up in that as well.
Right.
And we are more than willing to take risks with our family's future as well, many times, when we think we've got a good idea.
Right.
Bring other people around you to check that spirit.
You know, I had a consultant work with me some years ago who was, our business was doing well, but it seemed like it was beginning to flatten out a bit and even slide a little backwards. And I called in an outside guy to help me look at it. And even after paying him to give me advice, mm-hmm. I found myself getting mad at him on the advice he gave me.
Mm-hmm. Amazing how that happens, isn't it?
Because he was pointing out my fault, which I didn't think I had it. But right. I think it's John Maxwell one of his 21 irrefutable laws of leadership is called, I think it's the law of the lid, meaning that the guy at the top can be a lid or in the organization when right. you don't recognize your own shortcomings. And like you said, open that lid a bit and let some other people have some input into that whole thing. And I think that's something all of us as entrepreneurs have to be careful about.
Absolutely.
That we do learn to trust other people. I want to ask you about the insurance business in a moment, but we're out of time for this segment. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. By the way, check us out for a podcast on eddiemayfield.com. Also, plenty of information about the business and some links to Mike Haswell's business. We'll be back in just a moment. Stick around. Okay, welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. I may not have the best radio voice in the world, but I have the best face for radio that you've ever seen. So I'm glad you're here. Talking with Mike Haswell. Mike, tell us why you started Storing Treasures and exactly what it is that you guys do.
Well, our goal is to, really our mission is discovering your financial personality inspires progress. That's what we're all about. We want to help people understand how they're wired and then help them understand that they can make better financial decisions when they understand themselves, know thyself.
Right.
Then they understand their spouse and their spouse understands themselves, their kids, how that you interact with others. And then through that, we started this as a way to get that word out there. So, you know, Eddie, the way that I get out of debt may be different than the way that you get out of debt. That typically
right.
isn't taught out there. It says, you know, there's really just one way to get out of debt. If everybody would just do this, we'll be okay.
Right.
Well, guess what? We may be wired differently.
Right.
So as a result of that, I need to go about doing this a little bit differently than you do. And that is a huge, huge part of what we have to offer. And that is, once you pull that financial personality out and then offer examples of how that works, you see the light bulb go off. I was in a seminar about 9 months ago, and I had a gentleman come up to me, and he said, my wife is here. I really don't think you're going to be able to help me. We've been fighting like cats and dogs over this for 20 years. I said, well, I appreciate the confidence there, buddy. And he said, hey, why don't you give me 4 hours and let's see what it looks like after. And it was great. Afterwards, he came up to me and he goes, you know what? In the first time in our marriage, I now understand why it is that we fight. And we can do something about it now. And see, that's just, to me, that's worth every dime I put into this thing.
In the beginning of the show, you made a great comment when you talked about the fact that, and I think the reason marriage is a good example of this, And frankly, you could actually take it over into business partnerships, which happen the same way very often. Business partners do not see eye to eye and cannot understand why the other person does not see it the way they see it.
That's right.
And have big fights start out of that and even break the businesses up at times. But, you know, you did make the point, and I think it also applies to a business. You don't necessarily want to be in business with someone that thinks exactly like you think, because that's bringing nothing new to the table. If it's, what do you need them for if they're just like you? And in our marriages, I mean, what makes marriage both annoying and wonderful is that your wife is not like you.
That's right.
And that's a great point because couples do, you may have better stats than I do, but I'll bet money is one of the major causes of fights in a family.
Number one cause of divorce.
Really?
Is the inability to communicate about money.
Wow.
That is a key statistic. And why is that? It's because when things start to go a little bit south, when the stresses come up, and I'm talking to my spouse about it, and I'm like, you're not getting what I'm saying. We're struggling. You're going down this path. I'm going down this path.
Right.
And the headbutting starts, and all of a sudden, the hiding and the feelings of shame. I mean, money is already a difficult topic to talk about.
Right.
And now you're in, you know, married with potentially kids involved, and you're struggling with the basics of how to interact with each other. That's hard. It's really difficult, because if you can learn how to communicate during the difficult times, just think how much more wonderful the positive times are.
I think probably exacerbated in modern times by perhaps where if one or both or the other of the spouses are unemployed for and have been for a while in an economy where that's very easy to do, and you've already put a layer of stress in there already, and worrying, you know, somebody's laying awake at night worrying about this.
Right.
And you know, I tell people sometimes that as long as there's a great saying from Joe Louis, I like, said that, you know, I don't like money really, but it does seem to calm my nerves. And I think a lot of people have that as a great philosophy about money. But, you know, really, as long as money's going well, you don't have to think about it too much. It doesn't keep you awake at night. But boy, the minute it goes below some preset level out there, you will have a hard time thinking of anything else. And I think that's the stress that it throws into a family when you let your finances get in disarray.
Well, it does. And, you know, I see a lot of people who just don't want to deal with it. They'd rather just put their head in the sand, and they're like, if I don't deal with it, if I don't look at it, then at least I'll sleep, but not well.
Right.
At least I'll be able to make it. And our first thing is, no, we're going to get it all out on the table. You're going to look at it, and you're gonna really look at how you can move forward, because no situation is hopeless. And to move forward, you got to face it.
Right. Also, for what decision making is, the stress of any decision is always before the decision. Really, the making a decision relieves stress, and I think being able to put it on the table, look at it, and saying, okay, this is our plan. Mm-hmm. We've decided that alone.
That's huge.
That alone relieves stress.
You hit it, Eddie. I mean, that if you could point to something and say, this is the direction we're going, and we're going to stick to this, and we've come up with it together, there's a sense of teamwork, and there's a sense of, you know, we're in this together.
Right.
We're not in opposite corners arguing and fighting about this, but we're going to work on this. And understanding that financial personality piece about how you actually set goals together, and recognize you've got to understand how your spouse is wired so that you both can move forward.
Mike, going back to your business for a moment, just for those others out there that either are managing or own businesses, so just as a general business discussion, how do you identify in your business, how do you identify clients and market your business, a problem, something that all of us have to do?
Sure. So one of the biggest things that we've done is our model is business to business.
Okay.
It's not business to consumer. I mean, Dave Ramsey's got that nailed, right? He does a terrific job with his radio show, website. What we want to do is we want to work with employers, churches, nonprofits, any group that has individuals that are looking for help in regards to their finances. And guess what? That's most people.
Right.
Because we're not talking just to people who are in trouble, quote unquote.
Right.
Every one of us could use some good, sound financial coaching. And that's what makes us different, is we're a financial coaching firm. And so we've developed a web-based education platform to where we can work with people all over the country. And we do that through through this web-based application, along with the ability for you to put your own information in. and get advice back based on your financial personality. So that's how you, that's what we've done for the most part, is trying to scale something right now that maybe I could only reach a few hundred people throughout the year. Now I can reach thousands across the country.
But, you know, regardless, you know, information is marketing, marketing is information. Mm-hmm. And if a person that would really like to use your coaching doesn't know you exist, mm-hmm. Then they're not going to use you because they don't know you exist. It's, right. It's no different than my business. We're in a very niche business, the electronic mm-hmm. motor drive business, which most people listening don't even know what that is. But if you don't know what it is, and you're not a prospect for us. So,
that's right.
So I don't worry about those folks. But for the people that are prospects, our job is to get in front of them, and that takes right. a lot of doing. So, again, to your point, is there a way that do you do, like, invitational seminars or lunch and learns, or how do you what works for you?
Well, all of the above, but I will tell you one of the best ways to get in front of potential clients is through networking.
Okay.
So we have a couple groups that are lead generators for us, churches across the country, they know employers across the country. We work with, over the years I've built up relationships with people that have always been looking for something to help their own people with, but we never had the product to be able to offer. Now we do. Now we can go to them and say, you can offer this anytime, day or night, to your people. And we built this based on a lot of feedback from those in the community that said, you know, if you would take this market research and develop something that had this type of focus where somebody could do it day or night, where they could get the information that they need based on their personality, they could have something tangible to report when right. they're done about how they're wired and all of their finances in one place. That's what we need. And so we went out and developed it.
Do you find, are you in a competitive, I don't know this, I don't know your field, but is this a competitive business or are a lot of people doing this?
You know, a lot of people would say that it is, but interestingly enough, it's not. And I'll tell you why. There are many, many, we talked about this before, investments and financial planners.
Right.
All over the country that do a wonderful job in helping people with their investments. That's not what we do. We are a financial coaching firm. The reason you don't have many financial coaches out there is because typically it's not a viable business model. Because
right.
you're wanting help with your money, but you're going to come pay me $700 to sit down and do one-on-one. Well, there aren't right. many people out there that can afford that level. So what we've done is we've made this very cost-effective by putting it online, and there's very few people that have done that. It's a web-based platform, and now we can work, as I said, with many people across the country in such a way that you're going to get the same level of advice, but you're going to get it via your own timetable, not my
right,
timetable.
Right. The only reason I'm going back to this is because I teased it before the break, and I had to be honest with everybody. But I was going to ask you about insurance. You have sure. a background in insurance. I enjoy reading a guy named Porter Stanberry out in Texas who runs a financial an investment advisor. Mm-hmm. Is the correct word to use, I guess. And he talks very often about insurance being the most profitable business on earth. Now, most of us have a love-hate relationship with insurance. As a former insurance executive, what's your take on that?
Well, I'll tell you this. It's the most misunderstood business on earth because yeah. most people have no idea, don't understand insurance,
right.
what it means, and you can throw it out, whether it's auto, home, life, property, casualty, business. And so I would say really get to understand your insurance and what your risks are. The reason that it's so successful is because it's a protection against risk. And let's face it, life is risky.
It is.
And we need to understand what our risks are. And then we're going to go out there and get some people that can really help us understand that and then cover us. Because you don't want to have to wait until the claim comes in or the issue comes up. And guess what? If you don't have insurance for it, you're not covered. You need to understand what your risks are early so that you can go out and get the type of protection that you need.
That's why some of us, a lot of us actually, have some issues with the new national health care rules that have been passed, where it says you must take someone with an existing condition. Well, that's not insurance. If you've already wrecked the car,
right.
you can't buy a policy on that car. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting because that's a huge topic. Individuals that have pre-existing conditions in our old model of insurance, they couldn't really get coverage. So for those people, there's a need for that level of help.
Right.
But
yes.
what we've done, though, is we've now turned the entire system upside down, and we've involved a lot more people than we needed to. And so it's become unwieldy. And I think that in this case, there was probably a slice we could have done to protect those people that needed it.
I agree with that 100%. And the fact of the matter is, in our country, anybody that shows up in an emergency room is going to get treatment. I don't care who you are
right.
or what kind of insurance you have. That's just the way it is. Mike, you're an interesting guest. I appreciate you hanging around. If you can stick through us with another segment here, I'd like to talk to you about. They have a very interesting business, something I had not thought of before, to be completely honest about it. You're listening to Driven to Business. As a reminder, we're here every Saturday morning on WAFS, Atlanta's Biz 1190. I am your host, Eddie Mayfield, and we're glad you're here. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the final segment of this week's Driven to Business. As always, I keep saying this, but it's true, we're glad you're here. We're talking today with Mike Haswell. Mike is the president of Storing Treasures, where you can find that at storingtreasures.com, a financial coaching firm. Mike, let me ask you this. On a personal level, how do you like owning your own business?
I love it. It's not without its challenges, without a doubt. I'm not sure I'm wired like a typical entrepreneur. I think a typical entrepreneur has got, you know, a large amount of assertiveness that you need to be successful, and also a large amount of risk. You need to be able to take the risk. I tend to be a little more on the non-risky side, but what I find is it works for me. I just handle my, you know, business a little bit differently, in that our goal is to really jump out in such a way that we're going to be able to help people, but not so far, you know, out on the limb that we're putting ourselves at risk or in jeopardy. And I think that's important, because with business, you know, it's a balancing act.
Right.
You know, you've got to be able to balance the needs of your family. You got to be able to balance the product that you have. And I tell you, I really enjoy getting this word out there. It's just a huge win.
You know, in a lot of ways, people founding a business here in this country seems to, and I know it's a goal for a lot of people. It was for me. I've never completely understood the drive for it, even though I had it myself. Do you have a clue on it?
Well, our entire American culture is based on market, you know, capitalism, right?
Right.
I mean, when you look at it, what's made this country great over the past couple hundred years is that you have a group of individuals willing to step out. And I think that the history is, you know, let's face it, if you were to ask how many people would like to own their own business, many people would say yes. It's something they've dreamt of, something they'd like to do. Actually taking the step can be the big challenge. I think that in more and more with society, what's happening, you're not going to get the gold watch from IBM at 40 years anymore.
Right.
I mean, we are becoming, I was reading an article a couple months ago, we are becoming a nation of independent contractors.
Yes.
And it's slow and steady. And I'm not saying that, you know, companies are going away, are going to basically tell you work from home, we're not paying for your benefits anymore. But there is a move, a sea change, and you have to become your own CEO.
Right.
Even if you work for a company,
exactly.
You have to become your own CEO.
Yeah, you know, I think occasionally I've actually done this with some of our better employees. I've asked them, I said, you know, who is responsible for your career? Mm-hmm. And you know, the quick without thinking answer is, well, you are. And I said, no, I'm not. You are.
That's right.
I'm not responsible. I can't be responsible for your career. You're responsible for your career. And you know, how you advance in a career. And I think anyone that approaches their career, even when you're working for someone else, if you approach it as, this is my career and I'm responsible for it, and so if I'm good, bad, or ugly in it, that's me.
That's right.
It makes you a much better employee, of much more value to that company, and you will, even if you elect to stay within that organization, you will do much better in that organization mm-hmm. with that attitude than you will, I hope they treat me nice here and give me a good career. That's just a loser's way of looking at life.
That's
right. not a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back just for a moment, to back to this, spent some time talking about people getting in problems. I flew small planes for a number of years. I quit doing it some years ago. But, you know, one of the things they teach you when you're flying a plane is one of the instruments you look most often at is your airspeed. You know, the deal is, you know, check your airspeed and then check your airspeed again, because, you know, airplanes fly by wind going beneath the wings. And if it doesn't, if not enough, if air's not going under those wings at a fast enough clip, if at some point the plane stalls, you fall out of the sky and die.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, as long as you're above that, the critical airspeed, you don't have to worry about it too much. As long as you're up there where you've got plenty of airspeed, it's not an issue. It's fine. and you don't have to think about it too much, but the moment it goes below that critical airspeed, I promise you, you'll be thinking of nothing else but getting it back up
right,
there.
That's right, absolutely.
Because you're going to die if you don't, and doing whatever you have to do. And, you know, money in a business is that way. You know, businesses run on cash, and if you being out of cash is being out of business.
That's right.
Because you suddenly can't do things. And I think even in a, as well as a personal level and a business level, is something you, even though a lot of us may, as you pointed out, we may not be wired to look at that as well as we should, you've got to learn a discipline of doing it, and you
Absolutely.
Have to do it.
Absolutely.
Because you're ignoring it at your at the peril of your business, actually, and it's very hard to recover from that. Given your experience and what we had just talked about, for anybody starting a business or getting that would, and I'm sure you get some of this, people who are thinking about starting a business, do you have any, and I know there are plenty of books about this, and this is a kind of a hard off the top of your head question, but do you have any quick advice for anybody that's considering doing that?
I do. The first is going to go right back to what you just talked about. You need to make sure you have a runway. If you are thinking about starting a business and leaving your current job right now, I was talking to a friend of mine a couple years ago, and I asked him, when are you going to be jumping off and starting your own business? And he said, I'm planning on doing it next month. And I said, well, what happens if things don't go well? How long of a runway do you have? And he said, well, only about a month. I said, a month. I said, what's going to happen if things don't go as you planned? He goes, well, I'm going to cash out the 401k. And I'm like, wrong answer.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that, because basically what you've done is you've just set yourself up for failure. You've got no backup plan other than to dig right into your retirement right away. I mean, it's one thing to give yourself, you know, a year, but when you're automatically doing that, you're putting yourself at risk. Cash is the lifeblood of your business.
Absolutely.
It is the lifeblood, and without cash, and if you think you can just go out and get a loan from a bank, let me tell
that
is not the way it works anymore.
No, it isn't.
And guess what? They want to see cash, so, you know, you might as well just go ahead and save it up and not have to worry about that. That's one thing. The second thing is, and this sounds so easy, but I've made this mistake numerous times. If you're going to build a product, someone's got to buy it.
Right.
So why don't you go ask them beforehand, hey, if I make this, if I build it, if I offer it, will you buy it? Are you interested? Tell me a little bit about what you need. We get so wrapped up in the internal part of, I'm going to build this and make this great thing. And then how many times do we then offer that and it's no interest? It's too expensive, or it's really not what I'm looking for. Go out and ask the question. And the third thing is, don't feel like you have to, it's X or Y. If you want to start your own business, do it on the side. See what kind of market there is for it. Keep your income, keep moving in the direction of getting that out there. Many great businesses have started in the garage as sideline businesses. That's a great way to get the word out.
I also know a lot of people that started businesses that after being in it a few months decided, this is not for me.
Yes, sir.
This is one of these deals where the grass looked a lot greener than it was when I got here. And I'll be honest with you, my first 3 years in the business, that's exactly how I felt about it. I came to a point of just about shutting the thing down and going to look for a job. And fortunately, I had some good counseling and so forth that helped me sort of take a longer view of that, but and also adjust my behavior to the point where the business was not consuming my life, which is what it was doing at that time. And I just think there are those kind, you just got to look, you have to really put some real glasses on and look, take the rose-colored ones off and look hard at what you're going to do and be sure that's actually what you want to spend your time doing. Because, we all see the success stories. We don't see, there are a lot of them that are not successful. A lot of them do fall down. So, Mike, and we're out of time here. What are you going to be doing in the future? Just doing what you're doing now?
Well, I think what you just said, it's all about marketing. I'm getting the word out about this new program and excited about talking to employers and churches about what we have to offer. So I really do appreciate the time today, Eddie. This was great.
Hey, you're a great guest. I enjoyed talking to you. Remember, go to Storing Treasures, just like it says, storingtreasures.com, and check Mike out. Also, check us out on eddiemayfield.com. As always, we're glad you're here. We'll see you again next week on Driven to Business. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.